Good afternoon, and welcome to Unifin's first quarter 2021 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, we will provide instructions on the procedure to follow and open the floor to questions. If you have not yet received a copy of the earnings release, you can find it on Unifin's website at www.unifin.com.mx, or please feel free to contact the investor relations team at unifin_ri@unifin.com.mx, and they will provide a copy immediately. Forward-looking statements may be made during this conference call. These do not necessarily consider changing economic circumstances, industry conditions, the company's performance, or financial results. These forward-looking statements are based on several assumptions and factors that could change, causing actual results to differ from current expectations materially. Therefore, Unifin asks that you refer to the disclaimer located in the earnings release before making any investment decision. At this time, I would like to introduce Mr. Sergio Camacho, Chief Executive Officer. He will discuss the first quarter 2021 results. Mr. Camacho, you may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and welcome to Unifin's first quarter 2021 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, I will provide instructions to procedure to follow and open the floor to questions. Today with me are Sergio Cancino, our Chief Financial Officer, David Pernas, Head of Corporate Finance and Investor Relations, and Nayeli Robles, Head of Economic Analysis and Strategy. After our first quarter 2021 results discussions, we will open our usual Q&A session. Last year was an unpredictable and challenging year that led us to be conservative and prudent in managing risk. While accelerating our digitalization process, we prepared for the rapidly emerging digital economy and managed to adapt our business to come out stronger and more efficient. This year, our focus will be on returning to pre-pandemic origination levels, which, along with efficiencies we have made in acquisition costs, will drive profitability up while maintaining strict risk controls. We have also focused on maintaining a high-quality portfolio by basing our origination strategy on key sectors and regions that were not severely impacted by COVID-19. 72% of our origination this quarter came from strategic sectors such as agriculture, manufacturing, healthcare, and commerce, which are performing well. Origination started at a slow pace at the beginning of the year, but were still better than anticipated forecast for the quarter. We expect that as the economy begins to recover, originations will recover as well, and we can already see that pattern with month-over-month origination growth in the quarter. We expect this to continue, and we do believe that at this rate of economic recovery, we will reach pre-pandemic origination levels before the end of the year. The total portfolio closed at 65.4 billion pesos, the highest level since the beginning of the pandemic. It is not only larger, but it is also higher quality with greater diversification. Despite having lower originations, we increased our client base by 500 clients in the first quarter of this year, reaching more than 8,500 active clients. The average ticket decreased from 8 million pesos to 7.7 million pesos, which is around $380,000. A downward trend marked by the increase in UniClick's originations, which helped diversify the portfolio, providing greater stability. UniClick continues to deliver excellent results. The customer base has increased almost sixfold, and originations have increased by 74% versus the first quarter of last year. We reduced acquisition costs by 43% as a result of efficiencies made out to our processes, and 90 new clients were added to the portfolio during the quarter, an increase of 27.7% versus the previous year. The total portfolio increased to 413 million pesos, a 43.5% increase compared to the fourth quarter of last year. The prospect conversion rate is high, and we expect to meet our guidance related to this. We are very optimistic about what the future holds for this business line. As for the COVID-19 support program, The number of clients in the program has dropped by 45% since the start of the program, from 1,205 clients in the second quarter of last year to 522 clients in the first quarter of this year. Deferred payments amounted to 1.9 billion pesos during the quarter. The fact that the placement was made in March means that these 1.9 billion pesos did not generate meaningful interest income in the first quarter of this year, while funding costs derived from bond placements raised interest costs. Once payments resume, profitability will start to rise. 92.8% of the clients included in the program are up to date with their payments. Our NPL remained stable at 4.9% in the first quarter of this year, compared to 4.8% of the fourth quarter of last year. Our coverage ratio increased from 51.9% in the first quarter to 86.1% in the first quarter of this year because of a significant increase in our provisions. Loan loss reserve provisions increased 74% in accordance with IFRS guidelines, defined by the expected loss analysis to adjust to current economic conditions. Financial liabilities at the end of the quarter were 69.4 billion, a 12% decrease compared to 77.7 billion in the first quarter of last year. During the quarter, we issued a $400 million bond and the subsequent exchange offer of $127 million. Targeting 2023 and 2025 notes. The company maintains a steady liability maturity profile with a weighted average term of 48 months versus 28 months for the total portfolio. During the quarter, the weighted average funding cost, excluding the perpetual bond, stood at 10.6% as a result of quantitative easing policies and strategic financing activities. Interest income decreased by 3.6% year over year, but grew 2.3% when compared to the fourth quarter of 2020. The portfolio yield stood at 17.6%. The yield is offset by various factors that will normalize with our regular basis operating cycle. Such factors are the delay in interest income recognition as a consequence of originations placed at the end of the quarter, the non-accrual of interest income related to the deferred payments from our COVID-19 support programs, and lower origination volumes in recent quarters, which have impacted revenues as the first installments are mainly composed of interest income rather than capital amortizations. As a result of a much improved commercial strategy, better economic performance, and a change in the mix of originations as our working capital facilities become more relevant, we expect the yields of the portfolio to rally upwards by around 100 basis points towards the end of the year. The financial margin for the first quarter stood at 881 million pesos, a 21.7% decrease versus the first quarter of last year. This was mainly driven by an increase in interest costs as a result of the new debt issuance. The NIM contracted by 40 basis points to 6% in the first quarter of this year versus the fourth quarter of last year. This was due to three factors. First, the impact on portfolio yields from the previously mentioned support program. Second, the seasonality effect of our interest income due to the end of the quarter originations. And third, the negative carry from higher interest costs versus yields on cash position as the company proactively tapped the international markets at the start of the year. Administrative expenses decreased by 1.1% compared to the first quarter of last year to 369 million pesos. OPEX, as a percentage of revenue, fell by 20 basis points compared to the fourth quarter of last year to 13.1%. Despite the decrease in interest income year over year, which reflects our ongoing cost control practices and the operating efficiency that the company continues to achieve, net income decreased 25.6%. due to negative carry from the increased interest cost and the creation of higher loan loss provisions. Compared to the fourth quarter of last year, net income increased 0.5%. Moving on to the financial metrics, the return on assets stood at 1.5% at the end of the first quarter. The return on equity was 9.9%, but excluding the perpetual bond, the return on equity closed at 15.5%. Once again, the company decline in profitability can be explained by the effects mentioned before. However, management expects to see higher interest yields, a recovery in nominal originations to similar levels to pre-pandemic years, and an improved dynamism in portfolio quality. We are targeting an improvement in return on assets for the year of between 40 to 60 basis points, and expect to gradually return to levels reported in previous years. As we have mentioned before, we continue to exercise financial discipline, improving our capitalization ratio from 19.8% at the end of the first quarter to 21.5% at the end of this quarter, reducing our financial leverage ratio from 5.5 times at the end of the first quarter of last year to 4.9 times at the end of the first quarter of this year. Excluding mark-to-market, it stood at 4.6 times at the end of the quarter. We maintain a healthy financial gap between assets and liability maturities, prudently managing the company liquidity as part of our risk management approach. We have a clear roadmap to continue to improve our sustainability strategy. At the end of last year, we were working on our sustainability diagnosis, identifying trends and risks and opportunities amongst other items. This led us carry out an analysis of our stakeholders at the start of the year and prioritize constraints. We have completed our materiality assessment and are ready to define our sustainability strategy going forward. Through this work, we are addressing three main themes: ESG priority issues, and initiatives, and our strategic plan, including objectives, targets, and KPIs. We plan to move into the implementation stage, having set up working groups and committees to implement and monitor our initiatives. Through these actions, we not only aim to improve our ESG commitments, but we also plan to release our first annual financial and non-financial report for 2021. We continue to focus on generating long-term value for our shareholders. We are confident that we can emerge from this challenging period as a more resilient and efficient company and remain committed to serving Mexican SMEs. Thank you for listening. We will now like to begin our Q&A session.
At this time, we will be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. The confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question is from Alexis Canton of Stifel. Please state your question.
Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Alexis, are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm here. Sorry, could you not hear me?
We can hear you now. Please state your question.
Hi, I'm sorry. My first question is on derivatives, obviously in light of the recent news on Alpha Credit, and I think a little bit of increased focus. You had a big gain in your net derivative position, approaching, I think, 4 billion pesos quarter over quarter. We only had a sort of, 2.5% devaluation of the peso. So obviously that, that's a very positive increase in assets and obviously supports the equity or capitalization of the company. So I'm curious if you could sort of explain exactly why you were able to report such a large gain. And also, I want to talk a little about the relief program. I think you state that outside of the 5% approximate NPL that you're reporting, you have another 5% or so of loans that are still under the relief program. I mean, we are now at the end of the first quarter. I believe the relief program started in the spring of last year, so we're approaching a year. And so one would assume some of these clients haven't been paying for such a long time. So I was wondering, at what point do you contemplate charging this off? And obviously, just on the NPL, you're under provision. But if you include the extra 5% potentially from relief programs, there's another 4 billion pesos or so gap. So we wanted to get addressed a couple of those two questions.
Sure. Hi, Alexis. Thank you for connecting to the call and your questions. So let me start first with addressing the variations on hedges, no? First and most importantly, I think we would like to highlight that all of our derivative positions are for hedging purposes specifically, no? And that's basically the main explanation why the hedge accounting reflects and the fluctuations reflect on OCI as well, no? I do have to say that the differential between or the fluctuations in value from the mark-to-market 4Q vis-a-vis the first Q of this year are related to three specific or main considerations. No, the first being that over the course of the quarter we had a fluctuation of approximately 70 cents or more or less the 2.3% that you're mentioning in the valuation of the Mexican peso. So that effect aside, of course, with a very large delta in hedges, including principal and interest, no, we're speaking that the notional that we are basically hedging is close to or a little over $2.5 billion dollars, no, presents a substantial movement in the valuation, no. The one other thing, the two other things are, one, during the quarter also, the company hired a new hedge related to the new bond issuance in the 2029 notes, no? And that, of course, we hired that derivative at a more efficient, say, FX level at the beginning of the quarter, and then, of course, had a fluctuation over the last period of it. So there was a mark-to-market gain also on those trades. And finally, the other reason why there's a fluctuation in the hedges is not only related to FX. As you know, the embedded valuation of the mark-to-market of the hedges or the derivatives from swapping to US dollars to Mexican pesos, well, there's implicit valuations on rates too, no? And then because of that, the Mexican rate and the basis swap also had a substantial change. We're talking about 100 basis point differential over the quarter. So all those three effects make the notional, the vast notional that we are hedging today, again, upwards of $2.5 billion dollars, present these variations on a quarterly basis. So I hope that information is sufficient, but if there's any other question, we're happy to answer. As to the NPL related to the COVID-19 support program, no, as you know, we granted the first stage of the program was launched at the beginning of the first quarter, of the second quarter of last year, or the end of the first quarter of last year. It consisted of approximately 1,200 clients, with an outstanding balance at that moment of approximately 5.8 billion pesos. Over the course of time, there was a second relief program, and then from that point onwards, we saw an improvement in the performance of the portfolio. Less and less clients were requesting additional support. There was no additional support granted from the company to additional clients through the fourth quarter, and there hasn't been any additional support in the first quarter of this year either. The current clients that are subject to the program are approximately 522 clients, vis-a-vis the 1,200 clients originally in the program, and the outstanding balance is beginning to reduce on a gradual basis, no, as accruals and payments start to become due from this program, and that's why the outstanding balance has also decreased. The fourth quarter outstanding balance represented approximately 3.8 billion pesos, if we're not mistaken, or I'm not mistaken, and the current balance is approximately 3.2. No, so that's basically the explanation. And at the point, and at this point, or at the end of the quarter, the clients that are scheduled to start paying and so on, no, out of the clients that are scheduled to start paying, basically 93% of such are current underpayments as of the end of the first quarter. I'll leave it there and let us know if you have any other questions.
No, I appreciate that, but I think, you know, just the final part of that question, I think, was on sort of, you know, the difference between the, I guess, the maximum amount potential, including NPLs and relief programs, and the amount of provisions. Do you contemplate at any point having to take an additional significant amount of provisioning, you know, in I guess in the next few months? I mean, you know, you've sort of got, your NPLs are about 3.8 billion, if I recall. The relief program, at least at the end of the quarter, was about 3.8. And I believe you're only about 80% provisioned on the NPLs. So there's a, you know, 4 billion or so differential there. I was wondering how much of that 4 billion you might think is, will require additional provisions in, you know, in the upcoming, you know, periods.
Hi, Alexis. No, we do not anticipate to have a significant increase in our provisions. You need also to consider that as a difference from, like, say, a bank, the number that we're putting there does not include the asset related to that lease. So the risk that we have under those clients who are within the COVID program or so, it's less significant than what the number says.
And to expand a little on what Sergio was saying, I also think that it's important to consider, and that's the house view, say, that, of course, as we start to see a better trend on asset quality going forward, the cost of risk embedded in both the current NPL portfolio and, of course, clients that are subject to the COVID-19 relief program should also adjust favorably to the company. No, and this will come from two specific reasons. No, first, one of the main arguments or the main premises within the analysis of expected losses, no, is of course the payment behavior of the clients. And considering that we expect payment behavior to improve, no, this would offset the cost of risk. And secondly, the other factors is basically, the other factor would be basically related to that of the realization of the potential or estimated recovery value of the asset that Sergio was mentioning before. No, so all in all, we believe that there should be a normalization in the need for creating additional reserves in the coverage ratio, trailing to similar levels on a gradual basis as there's improvement in the portfolio metrics, and then of course in the cost of risk of the company.
Thank you. I have one final question. Sorry to take too much time.
Sure.
Your cash went up by about less than 50 million on the quarter, despite the 400 million of new bonds. I'm not including the exchange portion of the 2029 issue. You also announced that you've signed 8 billion pesos, so roughly 400 million again of credit lines. You have 900 million, I think, dollars over the next 12 months of refinancing requirements. So of that, let's call it 8 billion, 400 million dollars of credit lines, how much of that is available for refinancing general corporate purposes as opposed to specifically earmarked towards lending, securitization, secure the receivables, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, so virtually, I would say 85 to 90% of the 8 billion pesos that was disclosed in the press release are basically available at this time. We haven't drawn upon anything. And there was, of course, some liability management carried out over the first quarter of this year because we decided to repay on an anticipated basis a couple of outstanding securitizations that were in the Mexican market, which we're happy, by the way, to announce right now that we have finally closed a new private securitization will be disbursed probably in the next couple of weeks, but it's finalized. The transaction is finalized already, so there will be a replacement in the pledged or in the discounting of those receivables. No, but try to go back to the original point. No, most of the financing that was approved to the company within the quarter is now available in existing lines that are not drawn yet.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question is from Nicolas Riva of Bank of America. Please state your question.
Thanks. Yeah, I have two questions. The first one somehow related to what Alexis was asking. So the cash position, your cash position in the quarter increased by 1 million pesos, which is how much the collections on the loan book exceeded originations this quarter. But you also issued $400 million in new money from the 29s. You mentioned in the earnings report that you prepaid some securitizations. What were the other uses of cash in the quarter so that your cash position only increased by 1 billion pesos? And then the second question, Alexis already asked about the jump in the derivative position. I wanted to ask, given what happened with Alpha Credit this week, and I know that you do not compete with Alpha Credit in the main business in payroll lending, but you are also an unbanked financial, and I wanted to ask you, what's the regulation, if there's any, that you have from the CNBV or from any regulator in Mexico regarding, for example, your accounting for provisions for loan losses, your accounting for your derivatives position, or other accounts receivable, if there's any regulation for you at all? Thanks, guys.
Hi. Basically, the whole regulation are IFRS, and submitting your financial statements under IFRS actually is more restrictive than what you see on the Banking Commission. Once I say that, we need to submit, in terms of the derivatives, an annex to the Mexican Stock Exchange every quarter, explaining and showing them what is the status of our derivative position. That would be the answer, actually, no? We also, of course, we receive on a standalone basis or a regular basis some supervisions by the CNBV, although because we have a credit product such as factoring or auto loans. So under that, we are also, let's say, supervised in some extent by the Banking Commission.
Sergio, yes. I'm sorry to interrupt, David. No, oh. And because the point is that Alpha Credit also used IFRS, and unfortunately that didn't prevent them from having these misstatements, but I understand your point about submitting to the stock exchange the derivatives position and stuff, but that was my question, because they also use IFRS in the same way that I know that you have been using for a few years.
So I think there's a couple of differences, no, and we're not here to discuss Alpha's position, no. I think that's their responsibility, no. In our context, I can tell you a couple of things, Nicolas. First and foremost, we decided to change into IFRS because we were basically looking to report on their international standards of accounting. And the whole process of changing into IFRS and analyzing the changes in IFRS allowed us to really understand the full accounting and the full implications of IFRS 16, which is, for instance, the one related for leasing, IFRS 9, which is related to asset and financial liabilities, among other things. And this is the one, for instance, that evaluates, of course, and the reporting of derivatives. No? So that's one important thing. Not only did we internally prepare for reporting on their IFRS, but when we decided to move into IFRS, we actually performed what I would say was a beauty contest in terms of proposals with different accounting firms to let them pitch us the implications about moving into IFRS. And this was basically the work of consensus information from a lot of different firms that provided the insights on how we had to book everything, no? Very, very, very important. Secondly, in case of Alpha, no, they report their financial statements and so on a quarterly basis because of their U.S. denominated debt, but we're a public entity, and that's why the annex on the derivatives that we post to the Mexican stock and the banking commission to us, which is, again, evaluated on a quarterly basis, does have to prove that the accounting is done appropriately, no? And I don't think, and again, we don't want to compare or to mention what the other company is doing or saying or having to do, but I think this is something that doesn't apply to them, no? On the other hand, we continuously evaluate, not only with our own accounting firm, but with others, whenever we hire a new hedge, the efficiencies, the financial effects, and also the accounting effects of all of the derivatives that we hire. So this is very, very, very important to us. It's a priority. We have a significant derivative portfolio, and we owe internally every single committee and risk committee of the company, and of course to investors and so on, that this has to be recorded appropriately, no? And then, I mean, just moving on into other specifics, no? The evaluations that we carry out, no, are done by us with several different evaluation agents, no, such as Bloomberg, such as PIP, such as Valmex here in Mexico, among others. We have a team specialized in the evaluation and in the reporting of these derivatives. It's a special team within the company that evaluates the financial risk of the derivatives, and then, of course, additionally to this, evaluates the reporting of these derivatives. And the evaluation consists of being a consensus between the price providers, the banks that provide the monthly statements on mark-to-market with us, and our own valuation, and we have to identify that there's no more than a 5% variation between the consensus of these positions. And we even take the lower within the three of those valuations to be conservative, no? So this is very, 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 very important in terms of controlling risk, no? I mean, I hope this is
yeah,
a lot of disclosure.
Okay.
I can keep on going, by the way.
No, thanks very much for that, David and Sergio. And then on the uses of cash, besides the prepayment of securitizations,
yes,
and the origination this quarter?
So, as you know, the raising of debt, the $400 million, and it was basically put in the OM as well, already consisted of the or considered the repayment of a portion of short-term debt. And it was basically reported on the use of proceeds section of the document. Approximately, we were mentioning about $90 million in that use of proceeds, which were basically repaid immediately after the issuance of the transaction. And then we decided to repay the two securitizations, no? And later, we decided to also do some small liability management. The differential on other couple of facilities, which were expensive at the time. Additionally to that, basically it's originations, operational expenses, no, and well, fees and other type of disbursements that we pay for external services provided to the company and so on. I would say that's basically it. No.
Thanks very much, David.
Thank you, Nicolas.
Our next question is from Gilberto Garcia of Barclays. Please state your question.
Hello, good afternoon. A quick question for me. Can you provide some color on the drivers for the other income line in your income statement, please?
Sure, Gilberto. Thank you. Well, basically, the analysis here is if you see the cash position of last year of the company, no, it was approximately 3 billion pesos, no, and like we were saying before, we had an increment in 1 billion pesos in the cash position, which of course is invested, no. Last year we had a gain of 80 million pesos in this because of these investments in the first quarter of the year, and this year that gain represented approximately 90 million pesos, which is basically the differential between the 73 and the investment in and the cash investments that you see also in the operational gains, no, other operational gains.
Okay, and so as your originations pick up, I guess it's fair to assume that this other income line will decline.
That is exactly correct. This is basically an effect of basically a large cash position.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our final question is from Mark Reeder of GIC. Please state your question.
Yeah, hi. I had a few questions. The first one is that you issued bonds recently on March 11th, right? So just in light of the, you know, accounting issues, fraud, restatements at Alpha, I'm just curious if you could just talk a little bit about what kind of due diligence the banks, Barclays, Citi, Goldman did as part of the underwriting that might give investors some additional comfort. That's the first question.
So, I mean, we have a limited review, no, and a comfort letter from our auditors, and of course, there's several procedures of diligence through every single stage of the transaction in terms of basically doing a questionnaire that is basically I am sorry, 144A reg as a standard for every single transaction that we carried out, but there, it's been carried out through different stages of the process until disbursement. No, I would say that's part of the analysis the diligence that the banks do, and on the other hand, of course, our auditors with a limited review. Regardless of that, or even considering that, no, there's plenty of continuous reviews and procedures done by other entities continuously to the company, no, either because of the securitizations or because we're doing additional onboardings with other counterparties for funding and other type of proceedings, no, even the joint ventures and other things that we celebrate with commercial entities, no. So that's pretty much the level of diligence or scrutiny that we're subject to. Of course, Bolsa, CNBV, among others, no.
Okay, and so maybe ask it a different way too. Is, you know, how do you view yourself different from Alpha, and why we might not see any accounting issues at Unifin? That's the first question. And then finally, you know, noise from a competitor can be, you know, impactful to space. We saw your bonds moved a little bit downward. So how does that impact your financing going forward? And can you talk a little bit about your upcoming maturities and how you plan to address them?
Yeah, so, I mean, Unifin is a company with an extensive and solid track record. No, we have been basically operational for the past 28 years with zero implications in the company's reputation or any accounting and other type of potential effects or restatements. Never had a restatement. The company has issued over time more than 30 billion pesos in Mexico and shy of 3 billion in international markets from this type of issuances, in addition to going through a very, very thorough diligence process from development banks, not only in Mexico, but internationally speaking. And out of those, we also have, out of the amount that we have raised, we have repaid every single thing that has been scheduled to be paid, over $30 billion in total up to date. No, we are publicly rated since 2002 by Standard & Poor's, Fitch, and eventually we started also working with HR Ratings, local rating agency. We continuously are in discussions with the Mexican Stock Exchange, of course, and the Comisión Nacional Bancaria de Valores. They review us on a, say, a gradual basis, no, when required. We work with different banks, like I said, with different firms internationally and locally, no. And I think this is a big factor on the track record of the company. In addition to this, the company has no problem in opening disclosures as time goes by, and you can see this comparatively over time with our press releases. No, we always try to provide more and more and more disclosure. We are a completely open company, no, and I think that that should account for credibility. Also, our accounting firm, we of course do the proper procedures of changing the auditor as expected every 5 years and so on, no, the auditing partner and so on. So I mean, I think that makes up for a good argument of why we are the company that we say we are, no, or claim we are.
Okay, and on the debt and on the financings and how you plan to address that.
Sure. So it was, I think, very proactively done and opportunistic the way we approached the markets basically in January, and that allowed the company to basically raise shy of 50, a little over 50% of the 45% of the total budget that we were looking to raise this year. Of course, that budget of 1 billion pesos, which has been disclosed publicly to the market, considers liability management. So, I mean, we're safe and sound at this point. We, like I said, also raised or just closed this week a private securitization to do the refinancing of those that we repaid on the public market. We are working with different counterparties to address several warehousing facilities for our different business lines, no, and we have a couple of other financings on the pipeline on a senior unsecured basis with the private and syndicated parties to continue the financing and liability management that we have proposed for this year. No, so but being just a little over the first quarter of this year, we are basically at 50% of the year's budget, and we are just a few weeks over to basically advancing substantially in this budget. No.
In addition to that, over the last couple months, we have expanded our portfolio on financial institutions to work with. We have been proactively approached by those financial institutions to start some talks related to a specific kind of funding. Within our strategic planning for the year, we have agriculture as a business an opportunity, as a sector is going to be growing faster than the rest of the country. And on that regard, for example, we have approached two financial institutions that they are basically funding this type of project. So on that regard, I think that we are open always to expand the possibilities for funding, and in that sense, we do believe that the results that we provide last year, considering the whole environment under the COVID situation, being and showing our resilient model, coupled that with the recent additions that we have early this year, somehow position the company under a very solid and strong position, financially speaking and market speaking, and that's basically the situation that we are seeing right now.
So, I mean, of course, as a financial company, the most important thing is that you lower your cost of funding because, you know, that's how you make the most margin. So how do you see your costs of funding going over time?
We, the I'm going to shoot myself in the foot here, but basically the KPIs related specifically to my team, no, account for the fact that we have to maintain and reduce the cost of funding, no. And in this context, well, we fortunately have been looking for other sources that become at cheaper cost, such as the development bank financing locally and internationally too. So that in terms of averaging down the cost of funding will help us, of course, maintain this weighted average cost at the levels that we are hoping we can get. Secondly, of course, reference rates have decreased for some time, even though we have an expectation that they will eventually pick up a little in pace. But in the meantime, we are working hard on being proactive in closing some of those debts. Additionally, the composition of debt vis-a-vis other years, or the composition of say the types of debt vis-a-vis other years, I think will likely change a little, because we are targeting more securitizations, and that also would account for cheaper sources of funding. No, so the mix will probably help us in that context. No, and like I said, we did the pre-funding early this year. Of course, the yield was much better than the current levels of the market today, and I think that that. Being considered, we are hopefully reaching our targets for cost of funding for the rest of the year.
All right, thank you.
Our next question is from Natalia Corfield of JP Morgan. Please state your question.
Hi, David and Sergio. Thank you for taking my question, and thank you very much for the explanations on the derivatives. I think there has been lots of focus on that because of Alpha. Although I think there is a little bit of confusion in the market, because the 4.1 billion restatement of Alpha was not related to derivatives; it's related to other assets and other accounts receivables. But nonetheless, there was a restatement there on derivatives as well that we still don't know the impact. And it's an important part of the balance sheet of the NBFI. So in any case, an important topic to address. So thank you for that. And but looking at Unity results specifically, and I have to say, I kind of like the evolution of asset quality and the maturity profile of your loans and your debt. So I don't have that many questions on that front, but my main question would be related to your origination, because I'm seeing that has been leasing origination still very weak, and we saw a big increase in structured finance and others. So I just want to clarify with you that structured finance and others is related to UniClick, or if there's anything else there, and what do you see in terms of origination of leasing going forward?
Hi, Natalia. Yeah, thank you so much for your comments. Yes, I mean, let me give you some color on the originations. Out of the 4 billion pesos, no, basically the part related to UniClick is for the quarter was basically 90 million pesos, no? So it's still marginal when compared to the total amount of originations for the period, but growing rapidly, no? And the pipeline continues to grow on a day-to-day basis, no? This is a very interesting business model, and we hope that this will continue expanding exponentially going forward. The one important thing, and it's actually a very good question, no? Is that structured finance actually, aside from the 90 million pesos, no, line, also considers working capital facilities that are not necessarily directly related to UniClick, no, are more on the core business for cross-sale opportunities. But on the other hand, a big chunk of the structured finance numbers are related to bridge facilities that we extend to our clients and customers that will eventually be converted into leasing. They are not considered a lease as of today, because in most cases we cannot formalize a lease transaction when the asset is either non-existent, and when it's non-existent, what we mean is that it's in the process of being manufactured or imported into Mexico. No, so imagine a product line, a production line, or imagine a very built-to-suit type of asset. No, in this context, we cannot formalize the operational lease contract, so we have to wait. But we do the disbursement to the supplier directly. There's no sale and lease back on this type of bridge facilities, and when we formalize the transactions, they get converted to leasing. So eventually, the composition of the mix of the portfolio should not necessarily differ much from what you have today in terms of the entire mix of assets. No, I don't know if that is helpful. Sorry.
Yes, this is helpful. Thank you for that. And by the way, thank you for disclosing the collection numbers as well.
No,
you're more than welcome, Natalia. And just a little bit comment on that. We are positive on the strategic sectors that we have mentioned in our press release and whenever we have the opportunity to speak with you. So on that regard, and as I said during the presentation, now 72% of our origination goes to those sectors, in which, as I said, we are positive because we see the dynamism of some geographies and some industrial sectors that are linked to the U.S. will outperform better than the whole country. So on that, we are positive. We believe that we are starting to see a virtuous cycle within the company, and that's what we expect to show and present better results.
All right. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Adrian Garcia of Invesco. Please state your question. Adrian, can you hear us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Apologies for that. David Sergio, thank you very much for the call. My question has to do with outsourcing. Right now, we're hearing a lot of talk about the government pushing for companies not to do any outsourcing and to bring everything in-house. I'm curious, how would this push affect you guys? How much of your sales force or what other services are being outsourced, and would you have to make any significant changes that will affect your operations and, if any, your operational costs?
Hi, we are currently running all the different analyses. It's something that is out there, but has not been formalized to some extent. So we are working with different law firms, labor-related law firms, to see what will be the implications. But certainly, there will not be significant, because our current way of working, somehow it already incorporates these workers within our labor force.
So, but by doing this analysis with legal terms, it means that there could be an impact. You're concerned that there should be something that may be affected.
Yes, and the initial analysis show us that it will be not material.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
We have reached the end of the question and answer session. I will now turn the call back to Sergio Camacho for closing remarks.
Well, thank you all of you for being with us today. As we said, we are positive on the future outcome of the company. Uniclick is performing excellent, and that's part of our strategy on growing this digital platform and incorporate new products to that. So, well, we appreciate your interest, and we will be here for any further questions you may ask. Have a nice weekend.
This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation, and have a great rest of your day.